Hello again, and welcome to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 118. This is the podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community. If you're at all active in the online universe, and if you're a florist or simply passionate about good floral design, you probably already know about today's talented guest, Alicia Schwede, creator of the popular Flirty Fleurs blog. Alicia has more than a decade of floral design to her credit, beginning with her first wedding clients in the Bay Area, and later at her Denver-based studio, Bella Fiori. In the past year, Alicia migrated from Colorado back to Northern California's wine country, where she created the florals for many happy bridal parties this past wedding season. And now, due to life's unexpected turns, she is here in the Pacific Northwest. The life of a studio designer is a lot like the life of a writer. You are pretty mobile, and you can take your talents with you when you relocate. That's exactly what happened this fall, when Alicia followed her husband Chad for a work-related move. We met in person when she surprised me by showing up in a workshop I taught last month. Since then, we've had several great discussions about floral design and the state of the business. I'm excited to share our most recent conversation with you in today's podcast. Learn more about Alicia, about her career as a floral designer, and what inspired her to launch FlirtyFleurs.com, an online community for floral designers to gain ideas and inspiration from each other. Hi again, and welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing. I'm here today with Alicia Schwede. Alicia is a floral designer, a floral educator, an author, and the creator of the Flirty Fleurs website. And it's so good to have you here, Alicia.
Thank you.
We've just had a fun day doing a little antiquing, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
We didn't buy anything.
No, not one darn thing.
But we saw lots of inspiration. So I'm so glad that you're here in the Pacific Northwest now. Could you tell us a little bit about your journey and what's going on in your life professionally?
Well, okay, so I had Bella Fiori in Denver, Colorado for 10 years. And I just left there about a year ago now, went to California for 8 months, which is where I'm from, and then my husband took a job in Mount Vernon, Washington, so here we are.
And now you're going to be a Pacific Northwest resident.
Correct. I love it so far.
Well, it's interesting. So your retail, you never really had a retail business. You had a studio design business, right?
Correct. Yeah, I just specialized in weddings and parties and all of that. Not too interested in the day-to-day retail business.
Bella Fiori produced 1,000 weddings in your 10 years of business. That blew my mind when you told me that statistic. How did you grow that business?
I knew less than 20 people in Denver when I started, but I was young and just went for it, started networking like crazy, got my name out there, and it just grew. It grew and grew.
And did you Well, this is pre-internet, right? I mean, you just used relationships to market your business.
Yeah, it was 2003, and I actually used to work in software companies in San Francisco, so I knew how to build a website. I was one of the first people with a website out in Denver, and I did start building it that way, but most of it was face-to-face, knocking on doors, introducing myself, taking flower arrangements everywhere until people started to pay attention.
Wow. How would you describe the Bella Fiori look or the Alicia Schwede look in terms of your floral design business?
Well, I like to use a lot of flowers, big, puffy ones, the peonies, roses, all of that stuff. So it's
lush look.
Very lush, very like English, lush, big blooms, colorful.
And that's perfect because that's what a lot of brides are looking for.
Definitely.
When you were in Colorado, was there still a floral industry of flower farming in Colorado, or had it already ended?
It was already gone. Colorado used to be the carnation capital of the world, which I'm sure you know, but when I got there, I had no idea there were no carnations left, but one of the wholesalers in town, Stevenson's son, he knew I was interested, so he would always tell me all the stories. And they do grow. They grow their own lilies, anemones, ranunculus, so I always had the best of all those flowers.
Were they growing in greenhouses then?
Yeah.
Okay, so you were able to get that locally in Denver.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They grew all of that indoors in the summertime behind their warehouse, behind the greenhouses. They had a patch of just anything you can think of, all the fun little herbs and all that stuff.
Annuals and fillers.
Sunflowers, tons of sunflowers, scabiosa, all that stuff.
So you were a little bit ahead of your time using locally grown flowers before it was something people talked about.
And I don't think I even realized it. I just knew I liked their product.
Right. Well, as a floral artist, you're motivated by finding the best ingredients for your designs.
Best quality. And they truly had the best anemones that I've ever seen anywhere. And they're all grown right there.
And are they still in business?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, they're doing very good.
Stevenson.
Mm-hmm. Stevens and Son.
Stevens and Son. Okay, we'll put a link to that on my show notes. When did you... Well, first of all, your background in software maybe equipped you particularly to start a blog for florists.
I think it all definitely comes from that because I was working in San Francisco in software back during the big.com. In the
go-go years?
In the crazy, crazy time. And I learned how to make a website. It was a great thing. So I sat there and would make my website at work after hours. And they would help me. And so I got probably an early start with that.
But that was for the Bella Fiore
website.
The Bella
Fiore. And then I just kept learning and teaching myself. And so there's the blog.
And then starting the blog, Flirty Fleurs, when did that launch?
May 2010. We started thinking about it in March, and then we launched May 1st, 2010.
And what was your inspiration for starting Flirty Fleurs?
Well, I noticed that a lot of florists were not talking about themselves or showing what they could do, and everybody kind of just glazed over all this hard work that florists would put in. They were always talking about the photographer, the caterer, the wedding planner. And I said, gosh darn it, my friends work really hard. I want people to know who made this look so beautiful. So we started it with the intention of interviewing florists. And my goal is to have at least one florist per state be a fabulous florist. And I still have not reached my goal in almost 4 years.
How many states do you think you've identified?
Probably maybe 35. We have not. It's really hard to find people in Wyoming and some of the other states who they don't even have websites.
Right.
Still.
They're probably fabulous and they're there, but
yeah,
you have to unearth them.
I can't
them.
Find them. I'm searching.
Well, I know. I saw you put something up recently about your first Louisiana florist.
Yes.
So,
I'm so excited.
You're making strides.
Mm-hmm. And we have our first Arkansas interview going up next week, too.
So, Flirty Fleurs, who is your reader? Is it other florists, or how do you identify who comes to the site?
It's actually, majority is florists, but we actually have a lot of wedding planners who read it, too. And quite a few. All the ones in Denver all tell me they follow it because they want to know more. They want to be educated. They want to educate their brides. So they do follow it.
So your stories are diverse. You feature a wide range of things, not just profiles of florists, right?
Correct. We do. We also do like product reviews. We do farm interviews, all of that kind of stuff.
And I love that when you get your readers involved, like the recent foliage challenge. And you've done several of those, right?
We do quite a few. And I'm going to do another one for the month of December because somebody brought that up yesterday saying, please do something that's just foliage that's available in the winter, which sounds great to me. People love participating.
Well, I think it's fun because it gives you original content as well.
And it's so cool. We get stuff sent in. This last one, we had stuff from New Zealand, from the UK, all over Canada, all over America. So I think it's really neat to see how far-reaching this is.
So you've really created a community of people who have talking to their peers and even their competitors.
Yeah, that's been my goal, is to make it a community. And when people say to me, they say, wow, it's so good to know I'm not alone and other people feel the same way. And that's when I know that we're helping make a difference.
So from that, you've expanded doing some other things in terms of online education and your own book. Let's talk about some of the ways that Bella Fiore or Alicia Sweetie are, you know, you're not getting completely erased in this flirty florist world. You've got your own projects, right?
Yeah, it's funny. They're all coming from the blog, though. I didn't see this forming originally 4 years ago, but now it seems people do want me to come and teach workshops and all that. And I like sharing. I like teaching. I like helping people. And it's just evolving, which mm-hmm. is fun to see.
And your book, which is called Bella Bouquet, right?
Bella Bouquets, yep.
Oh, Bella Bouquets, plural. Okay. It's how did that come about? That's a beautiful project. And I have my own special copy in hand here. So we'll make sure we put a link to that.
Well, I knew I always wanted to do a book. I think I told you before, I'm a book and magazine junkie as it is. So I knew I wanted to do a book. It was just deciding what to do. And then I decided, more than anything, every wedding consult I would have starts with the bridal bouquet. So why not do a book just about bridal bouquets and show everything? Show all the different colors, all the different types of flowers I could find. And it took a while because we had to wait for the seasons to pass so I could get peonies in their prime or dahlias in their prime. So it took a well into over a year to get it all done.
And how many bouquets did you design for the book?
There's over 100. Maybe 110 or
so. Wow. And they're all your designs?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
That is impressive. And it does sound like you could almost hand that to a bride at a consult and have that be the starting point just so she can understand the diversity of options.
That's what a lot of the florists who have bought it, and I've had people in Kentucky who email me and say, I use your book during consultations so I can show a bride what's available here in Kentucky. And they really like how I have it all broken up, the color varieties, all of that.
Oh,
and the
that's
brides
great.
Go through and pick out what they like.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, the whole, I used to call it the Martha Stewart factor, and that is that brides do see a particular flower on the cover of a wedding magazine, mm-hmm. and then they tear that page off and march over to their florist and say, this is what I want. And there's always that, maybe just that missed step of knowing what's in season and what's available. What are you seeing? How do florists handle that, and what are some creative ways to address that?
That is actually something I thought about with my book, because as much as I love those Martha Stewart bouquets, I lived in Colorado for 10 years, and most of that product was not available. So I did, as I was doing the bouquets, thought, what can the florist across the country truly get, especially in a state where we have winter for half the year? What can we get? We're not going to get some of the stuff she could get in New York City.
So, or the more exotic.
Yeah, more. We were not getting the more exotic stuff. So
guess that's why you put tulips on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's very accessible.
Exactly. Yep.
Even if it's maybe not locally grown, it's readily available.
Exactly, yeah. And so that was one of my thoughts, is to make it so it's really something florists can use.
Mm-hmm. And what are you hearing from florists in terms of their take on the whole locally grown, American grown movement? I know you speak to people every day. You hear from florists and designers and wedding and event designers from all around the country. Are they asking you for those resources, or are their brides asking for those resources?
I think what a lot of the florists are interested in and what they see with locally grown that they find appealing is the specialty items, like vines. Almost every florist I talk to wants vines, and that's not something that can be mass produced. You have to get it locally. You need to know a grower. I think any small farm who grows vines could sell every single one of them.
And you're talking about clematis, but also maybe climbing roses?
Passion vine is huge, or passion flower vine.
Right.
And clematis, and then...
Jasmine, probably.
Jasmine, for sure.
Well, and I also see even in, in the fall, you've got grapevines, and there's all kinds of beautiful berry vines. And, mm-hmm. and so you're talking about things that are almost ephemeral, that they don't show up in the wholesale market at all.
Exactly. That's what they want. Something a little different to make their design stand apart. that, and we both know they just won't travel. So it needs to come from somebody nearby.
And do you think that there's been a kind of a disconnect between the floral designer and the flower farmer, and that they just really don't have opportunities to talk with each other?
That could be part of it. I would say most florists I know, they don't even probably think about that anybody would listen to them, perhaps. That's one of the things when I interview the farmers and I'll ask them, well, how do you decide what to grow for next year? And they say they want to hear from florist. But I would go talk to a florist and they would look at you like, well, I don't have a say in that. I just pick up what's at the wholesaler.
So really we need to do a little matchmaking between the two of us.
Yeah.
Get these conversations going.
Yeah.
I find that when I meet florists who work directly with farmers in their community, a lot of creativity comes out of it because
I would think so.
They can, farmers don't know what the color trends are for the 2015 bridal palette, but the designer probably does. And so there could be some cross education there.
Yeah. Some of the farmers are very open to that when I've gone on site and they're like, we want to know what's coming up next.
Right, right. And I think you also want to encourage them to grow certain crops. So you, selfishly, you have that available.
Yeah. Well, I think any farmer still to this day could do Café au Lait dahlias and sell every single stem of them.
Yeah. And that's not a very shippable flower either.
No, gosh, no.
Well, what do you think is on the horizon for the floral design industry? Do you see, I hate to use the word trend, maybe of the moment ideas that you're either writing about or interviewing people about? It could be in a particular flower type or a particular design style.
You know, it's funny. I don't see a big change from the last few years. Every time I ask anybody that, it's the same thing. Everybody wants the garden roses, peonies, and Café au Lait dahlias. And I keep asking, well, do you see new colors coming in? And so far, I keep hearing blush, blush, blush.
Well, you made that comment earlier today about the metallic gold. And you thought that was going to end up...
I thought it was going to... It seems to me that florists want to see something a little bit maybe more ornate coming in, and yet their clients come to them and they still are like, mason jars look good. So
we need to find the next mason jar.
Yes, that's what every florist says, I think, across the country in the UK.
You were eyeballing some urns, maybe.
I was. Please, urns, give me a little bit more decor.
Well, that's interesting because there is that whole do-it-yourself movement that is probably where the mason jar phase or, you know, can be connected to in some way.
That could be. Probably is.
I find that a lot of florists are willing to teach the do-it-yourself bride student because they realize that there are certain people who are not going to spend the money to maybe have a full service wedding. So maybe teaching is just another income opportunity.
I would think it never appealed to me, but I can see where a lot of florists do it because it is income and it could be help them pay their bills and got to do what you got to do to survive. Mm-hmm. So,
well, talking about survival in the floral industry, because your specialty, it seems, is mostly studio designers and wedding and event designers. Are you also hearing from brick and mortar flower shops?
We do. We do definitely have quite a few followers from there. And I haven't heard them tell me anything different as far as trends go, though, even with their daily deliveries. Mm-hmm.
Well, at least there's some that are still around, right?
Oh, yeah. Thank goodness.
I mean, the conventional wisdom is that traditional flower shop may not be able to survive e-commerce or imports. Are you seeing those numbers change across America?
From what I've seen, even just from traveling about, there's a lot less than there used to be. Even in the big cities, they're not. You used to see one every few blocks, and there's just not as many. The ones who survive, they have to find a niche and get in with the right people.
I was just going to ask you, what is the secret of survival in that industry?
Boy, it's just got to be relationships. The relationships they build with their customers. And I do wonder, I've heard of a few shops who do give workshops at their floral shop.
At their facility, yeah.
Yeah, and maybe that's it. Maybe it's just the connecting with the community that helps them survive. Gets people in the door, gets them excited, makes them think a little bit differently.
Well, I think, you know, there is that magic fairy dust that sparkles in some retail environments. We were noticing it today while we were poking around antique stores. There, it's almost the intangible essence of, why do I want to stay inside this space?
That's a good point. Like that one shop, it was just the lighting was right in there, the how everything was staged. You wanted to sit there or wait and look at everything. You don't want to miss anything.
Right. And I think that there are some flower retailers who do amazing work at creating an evocative mood inside a space. You might not think you're going to spend money, but when you walk in, but then you end up...
You have to leave with something.
Yes, you have to leave with flowers.
Yeah. You need to have it, yeah.
Well, so what do you have coming up? You're going to be involved in a big event in January for the floral industry with some of your colleagues.
It's the Chapel Designers and Floribundance Design Days have combined into one big event in Santa Barbara. It's January 20th through 22nd, and so far we've got Nancy Lu Chin, Holly Chapel, Francois Weeks, and it's a great event. We did it last year.
And Alicia Sweetie.
Yeah, well, I talk social media. I don't know if I get to do any designing, but...
Well, so this is really like just a talking shop with your peers kind of event?
We have both. You design hands-on with product gathered by Floribundance. And as you know, Yost, who's the owner of Floribundance, really works with California growers surrounding his location.
So that makes me happy to hear.
Oh, he took me last year after conference. He took me to a few of the surrounding farms. I went in there, photographed everybody, saw how everything grows. It was really awesome. And that is who he mostly buys from. So
he's a wholesaler.
He's a wholesaler. Okay. Floribundance, yeah. And he brings so many flowers to the conference that everybody just gets to pick and play with and design. It's just very, very creative.
So it's kind of a way to recharge your batteries as a busy florist.
Exactly. And then you get inspired by some of the best in the industry who are willing to talk business and talk numbers and talk the future and all of that. So last year, everybody walked away very inspired. I'm sure it'll happen again.
Well, and tell me about what you're doing. If you're teaching on social media, I bet that's growing by leaps and bounds. But you were talking earlier about some florists who don't even have websites. So there's another skill set involved in that kind of thing.
It's a funny, funny business when you're self-employed because you really... You're everything. You're your own self-promoter, and you have to. You could try to hire somebody, but in the end, you're the only one who knows your product and the passion, and you have to learn how to talk about what you're doing, and that's what I do. I go over how to do social media and connect with others and sell your product and how to talk about it on Facebook and Twitter and all of that stuff and get your work out there.
And do you find that most people take baby steps and then they realize it's not that painful and then they can keep going?
And then you realize it's actually kind of fun. I met the majority of people I know through Twitter, and to connect with people in Virginia and the UK and all over Canada, that's amazing.
You really do have a community that is global now.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely. It's kind of crazy. It's like you meet them online and then you know at some time your path will cross, which is cool.
Right. You have to, because the human connection is still very important.
Exactly.
Well, it sounds like a valuable workshop for people coming to this session. Like, designing, of course, is what everyone loves, but you've got to talk shop too.
It's a good balance, because we all know you can't talk shop all day without getting just overwhelmed and tired of it. So it's a perfect balance of talk some shop, get excited, but don't get too stressed out. We're going to design with flowers, and you can be creative while all the other stuff sinks in.
It's the right brain, left brain.
That's
your next book, The Right Brain, Left Brain Floral Designer.
That is a good idea.
Well, what do you, I know you're in the middle of transition in your life. Do you have anything specific that you're can, you know, talk about that's coming next, either on the Flirty Fleur site or with your workshops or writing?
I think right now for me, Flirty Fleur is doing great. I'm just going to keep going with it. I love it. I've been doing some online classes for people who want to work on social media with me, which is super fun. And then I'm also thinking workshops. I've got a few in the works for 2014 and kind of spread out all over the country. So that'll be fun.
That'll be great. And we didn't say how frequently you update Flirty Fleurs, but you post 5 days a week,
right? 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. Colorado time.
Well, guess what?
It's now
you have to get up
before me.
You have to get up Pacific time now.
Yeah. Well, it's great. I wake up and there's already a blog post up.
You're like, oh, my day is done.
Exactly.
Do you have any sense of your readership in terms
you
of...
Know, it's well into the thousands every day. I don't worry about it, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, it's not like you're checking Google Analytics every 5 minutes or anything.
No, in fact, last time I checked, that had broken on there, so I guess I should get that fixed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But people can go on and just subscribe to by putting their email address in to get your daily notices,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they can sign up for the RSS feed to get the daily sent directly to the email.
Okay.
And then we do update our Facebook page Monday through Friday, and then sometimes on the weekend too if I see something inspiring.
Okay, good. Well, I will put all those links on my show notes so people can,
awesome,
if they don't know about Flirty Fleurs, they can find you, Alicia, and maybe we'll you'll have to put a wish list up of all those states that you haven't identified
forests
for.
That's a good idea.
Do it like a treasure hunt.
That's a good idea. There's just a few who are just eluding me right now.
Oh, let's do it. And then we can maybe have you can have some kind of big event to unveil your last few florists.
Yeah, I don't even have anybody in Alaska yet. Maybe that should be my 50th.
Oh, that'd be perfect. All right, yeah, we'll put out the challenge.
Yeah, good idea. I like that.
Well, before we end, I have to ask you if you can name your favorite flower, and is that even fair to ask someone like you?
You know, it does change with the seasons, like I think with everybody, but in the end, I love dahlias. I love the shapes of them, so that's definitely one of my top, and then my other one is just the true garden rose, because my grandmother had the most amazing rose garden, which I think everybody probably says, but...
No, that's probably what inspired you to get involved with flowers.
It is. Oh, she and I used to always go pick flowers in the morning when I'd stay with her and put them on the desk. And she always had a rose bouquet for me at my software job, so... So I like the good old standard garden rose.
Well, I wish you a lot of luck in finding your own new home up here so that you can start planting your own rose garden.
I have quite the plans for my future garden once I find where it's going to be.
Well, stay tuned, and you will be reading about that on Flirty Fleurs when Alicia finally can tell everyone what's going to happen to her.
Yeah.
The garden in your mind will soon become real.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be crazy.
Well, thank you. I wish you a great 2014.
Thank you. You too.
If you're interested in learning more about Alicia Schwede and Flirty Fleurs, that's FLIRTYFLEURS.com, be sure to subscribe to her free newsletter. You can find the link and photos of Alicia's beautiful design work at DeborahPrinzing.com, along with details about Alicia's bridal bouquet workshop, which I'm hosting at my event space in Seattle's Pioneer Square on February 1st. Thank you for joining me in this episode of the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing. Because of your support as a listener, there have been more than 3,500 downloads since July, and I thank you for taking the time to join my conversations with flower farmers, florists, and other notable floral experts. If you like what you hear, please consider logging on to iTunes and posting a listener review. I want to leave you with a passage from Alicia's book, Bella Bouquets. She writes, "I still stop dead in my tracks when I spy a perfect peony, a gorgeous garden rose, or the sweetest sweet pea at the market. I find great pleasure in sharing my love and affection toward flowers. This book and the blog flirtyfleurs.com are just a few ways for me to share and connect with others while exploring the flower path ahead. To me, that flower path is right here under our noses. It's not on another continent, especially when locally grown and seasonal botanicals are available to designers and flower lovers.
So thank you, Alicia, for such inspiration. Until next week, please join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. The Slow Flowers podcast is engineered and edited by Hannah Holkertz. Learn more about her work at hhcreates.net.